I don't know about you, but sometimes I feel very despairing of the world, you know, especially when I watch TV. Sometimes it feels like all of humanity, well, at least Western civilization, has become completely self-absorbed, self-seeking, greedy, and narcissistic. And so I like to find stories like this one about William and the windmill because it inspires me and it reminds me that there are people all over the world who are doing amazing things in service to the common good, to the greater good. People are out there all over the world helping and fixing because, in truth, there is a lot that needs to be fixed. There's still a lot that's broken out there. And there are also people and animals who are weak at times and need a helping hand. Right here at WUU, there are all kinds of ways to help and all kinds of things that need fixing around here. We can surely use your gifts. As a matter of fact, we would like to know what all of your gifts are, your gifts and your interests. And so tonight, right, Dave? Tonight or maybe tomorrow morning, you'll all be getting an email with an electronic survey to fill out to tell us what those gifts are. We also have a paper version if you would rather do paper and pencil. And it's very short. It'll just take a few minutes. So when you get that in your inbox, please don't ignore it. Helping and fixing. Helping and fixing are valuable ways for us to contribute to the greater good. And yet, there is a downside to helping and fixing, something that our reading this morning pointed out. And the downside is that it's not always a relationship of equals, is it, when we're helping and fixing. A helper or fixer may see another as weak, weaker than they really are, or needier than they really are, and this act of helping and fixing sometimes may inadvertently take away more than we could ever give to them. There is a risk of taking away a person's sense of dignity and worth. There is a risk of reinforcing the role of helper and the one who needs help. And sometimes helping may be the work of the ego rather than the work of the spirit. One writer had a first-hand experience of this when he went on a recent trip to India. Now, he says that in India, begging is just a way of life there. I mean, it's just everywhere. And it's something that you just have to get used to if you're going to travel around the big cities in India. One day, as he was trying to ignore the many people begging on the streets and in the marketplace, he noticed a young boy with a begging bowl. And the boy looked so hungry and so sad that this writer took out an orange from his backpack and put it in the bowl. The boy says nothing. The boy doesn't smile, doesn't nod in acknowledgement, doesn't respond or acknowledge the gift in any way. And the writer feels himself getting agitated and angry. He notices that there is this feeling of bitterness and even a little embarrassment rise up in him. And as he's noticing all of this, he suddenly realizes that he gave the boy that orange to make himself feel better. It was an act that was to benefit his ego rather than to benefit the boy. Serving is different from helping or fixing. Service and serving is an act of the soul rather than an act of the ego. It is the work of the Spirit reaching out beyond the boundaries and uniting us with our brothers and sisters in this one common human family. Now, helping and fixing, like I said, are useful. And they also require some skill and some talent. If you're going to help or if you're going to fix, you're going to need some resources, right? You need money, you need tools, you need talent. But, you know, if you're going to serve, you don't need any of that. All you need to serve is your full humanity. That's all you need. Your full humanity. All of your experiences. All of your experiences of joy and sorrow, of brokenness and healing. And that means that anyone can serve. The oldest and the youngest among us can serve. You don't have to have money. You don't have to have any special skills. You just need the willingness to be with other people. You need the willingness to see, really see another person fully, to listen to their stories and to share your stories with them. And while these people can be the ones closest to you, like your blood kin or your favorite friends, it's really when we serve strangers that our souls stretch the most. As the poet Pablo Neruda said, to feel the love of people we love is a fire that feeds our life. But to feel the affection that comes from those we do not know, from those unknown to us, who are watching over our sleep and solitude, over our dangers and our weaknesses, that is something still greater and more beautiful, because it widens our boundaries of our being and unites all living things. Now, most of us are not going to get international attention for building windmills in Malawi or for feeding thousands of people in India. But as Dr. King once said, everybody can be great. Everybody can be great because everybody can serve. You don't have to have a college degree, Dr. King writes. You don't have to make your subject and verb agree to serve. You only need a heart full of grace and a soul generated by love. You only need a heart full of grace and a soul generated by love. The rabbi David Wolpe tells this story. It's a true story and comes from his family. And it's about a boy. Now, the boy is 11 years old, and the boy's father has just passed away. Now, as is customary in the Jewish tradition, the boy walks to synagogue every morning before school, every day, to pay honor and remember his father. Now, after he's been walking for a few days in a row, he notices that Mr. Einstein, who works at the synagogue, starts coming, you know, past his sidewalk by his house at about the same time that the boy is getting ready to leave. And so they just walk together. And they walk and they talk and they go to the synagogue. And this happens every single day for a whole year. Every day through the summer, through the hot and humid days of summer. And then every day through the breezy, cool days of fall, into the snowy, bitter cold of winter, every single day they walk. And finally, into the warm sunshine of spring, they walk. Now, the boy grows up, he becomes a man, he marries, and he has his first child. And when this first child is born, the boy, now a man, thinks back at on those times, and he thinks about Mr. Epstein, calls him up. He's living in the same house. He's about 90 years old now. And he invites Mr. Epstein to come to his house. Please, meet my wife, meet my new son. And Mr. Epstein says, well, you know, I'm not getting around as quickly as I used to, so could you come pick me up? And so the boy, who's now a man, drove to the address and is shocked to find that his house was actually a full 20 minutes away by car. And actually in the opposite direction of his own house. And it just dawned on him that for all of those days, Mr. Epstein had walked a full hour out of his way to come walk past the boy's house so that the boy would not have to walk alone. You don't need a college degree. Your subject and your verb don't have to agree. You don't need any special skills or money or special resources at all in order to serve. You don't have to even look beyond this spiritual community. There are 100 ways to serve right here. What it will require, though, is for you to do something new, to hang out with new people, to go places that you have not been before, to sign up for activities that you never thought you would sign up for. It will require you to talk to strangers, to ask them about their lives, and to tell them about yours. And in this way, you will widen out the boundaries of your being. You will awaken, and you will see that this life is service, and service is joy. May it be so.